This podcast is brought to you by HostingSmallBiz.com, professional web hosting for your small business.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
Ryan, how's it going today?
I am doing fantastic. Greg, how about yourself?
Doing pretty good. I think today's a pretty good day to do a little brainstorming. What do you think?
Sounds apropos to me.
And do we have an apropos guest speaker for today?
Absolutely, yes. When distinguished Toastmaster and past district governor Craig Harrison joined Lakeview Toastmasters in Oakland, California in 1992, he was, by his own admission, a stumbling, mumbling, fumbling bag of insecurities. 24 years later, Toastmasters not only turned his fear into fun, but helped him break into management, change careers, publish books, become a professional speaker, and travel the world. He and his company, Expressions of Excellence, owe it all to Toastmasters. You've likely read one of over 70 of his published articles in the Toastmaster, attended one of his three Toastmasters convention programs over the years, or been touched by one of his programs as he visits clubs across many continents. Helping others become the consummate Toastmaster, please welcome the author of the article in the April edition of the Toastmaster about brainstorming, Craig Harrison. Welcome, Craig.
Welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen. Great to be back with you again.
Great to have you with us. So we are chatting today about brainstorming, Craig. And to start off, I want to ask you, what's the difference between brainstorming, as you've written about it in your article, and what I'll maybe call informal brainstorming that happens within a meeting, maybe for a Toastmasters club or in a company? Let's say, for example, an employee has left the company and people are facing that situation in a meeting, and someone says, well, we need to place an ad right away. And someone else says, well, why don't we do a temp to perm? And then someone says, no, we can't do that. We need to promote from within. Let's find a candidate from within. So that's kind of an informal brainstorming. How's that different than what you're proposing for us today?
It's related. And it's all good. What I would say is that with brainstorming, official brainstorming, you're really suspending judgment and in the process of generating oodles of ideas. So quantity becomes important. And at any given time, what you describe can thwart an actual brainstorm because somebody will realistically say, oh, well, that won't work. That's been tried before. We don't have the budget for that. So sometimes the reasonableness gets in the way of the exercise of brainstorming, which really asks you to suspend judgment and to exhaust all the low-hanging fruit and then really get creative and really come up with ideas out of your normal thought processes.
Is brainstorming something that you have to plan ahead of time, or is it pretty much done impromptu?
I believe the best brainstorms do have some setup and some intention and some focus that help them to succeed. It's true, on a moment's notice, we could do a standing brainstorm or a virtual brainstorm. Yet I find that the more we put into it in terms of getting the right people in the room, setting the right tone, creating the right environment, maybe it isn't a room, in fact, maybe we're on a merry-go-round or in some fun environment that stimulates creativity. Plus, we really do want to orient people and warm them up. And so things like that take more time. Plus, if we're going to have an exhaustive session, we might want some nourishment and some games and some tongue twisters or brain teasers and things of that sort. So, you know, it's really like a date in a sense. But the more intention, the better the results.
Yeah, I'd like to ask you a little bit more about the notion of suspending judgment as folks are tossing out ideas during the brainstorming. Should all judgment be suspended or just negative judgment? A lot of times in these sessions, we hear people say like, oh, that's a good one. Or maybe someone intentionally throws out something that's kind of a zany, crazy idea. And people will laugh because it's just so silly. Are those kind of, quote, judgments to be avoided? Or if it's a positive judgment, is that okay in your opinion?
I think there's a fear in editing and there's a fear in selective judgment. So if you can get people in advance to adopt some ground rules that will accept all ideas and we will suspend judgment, then people who are shy are more prone to share an idea. People who are introverts or who are quiet or insecure or for whom English is a second language are more likely to participate. Now, there's always a prankster, and I've been that person, that scores points or wants to show off how smart or clever that they are. So in advance, we can say that, look, this is a team activity. Let's be collaborative. Let's think of the greater good. But the moment you start to label and judge and categorize, I feel that some of the magic is lost. And it's natural. We're all reasonable, logical, responsible adults who have budgets and timelines and limited personnel and stress. But for the activity of brainstorming, you want to get out of that. You want to let go of your usual patterns of reasonableness where you say no or you say yes, but because all it takes is one of those to quash the mood in the room. In the article, I actually shared a story. I believe it's the truth is I was the person who mustered the courage finally to share an idea in a brainstorming session. And the moment I did, the manager from the East Coast who had just transferred in said, well, that'll never work for the 59 other ideas that were floated. She didn't say a word, but the moment she labeled my idea as that won't work, you could feel the air go out of the room. You could feel people tightening up and a thud as she rained on my brainstorm. It was palpable. So yeah, judgment at this stage when you're generating ideas should be suspended, in my opinion.
And I think there's an additional dynamic in that example as well, which not only was it a negative comment about your idea, but it was a negative comment from someone in a position of power, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the rest of the session, everybody out of the corner of their eye was looking at her for how she was going to react.
And so that goes into another one of your suggestions in the article, is that everyone becomes an equal player during the brainstorming session. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, there's such a wealth of knowledge in the room. And by accepting all ideas with a yes and approach, it's the great leveler. We're not hung up on who the idea comes from. The truth is that, Ryan, your beautiful idea may be modified by Greg and then by Craig and then by other people. And it may not resemble the original idea, but for the sake of the greater good, what's important is that we all can contribute. We all have value. And the moment we start to attach names or initials to ideas, things become proprietary. You know, in the book, The Innovators, all about the formation of Silicon Valley and the advent of the high-tech generations, it's fascinating to hear about the brilliant ideas happening around the country and around the world at the same time. But then when the patent attorneys got involved, suddenly then some people were open source and some people weren't. And it's just interesting how I think the same thing happens when you start to let hierarchy find itself in the brainstorming session. You really want everyone on equal footing, and you expect everyone to contribute ideas. That's part of the ethos of brainstorming. We're all going to contribute. We all have something to offer.
How do you handle a situation where it becomes quite, for example, political? I'm thinking back years ago, long before I joined Toastmasters, where I was that person who sat in the back of the room and just kind of meekly tried to put my hand up, but was afraid of being knocked down, only to put my hand up or say my piece, and then all of a sudden it gets knocked down, primarily for political reasons, rather than not the fact it was a good idea. It was just that it was Greg that gave the idea, therefore we should say it's a bad idea.
Yeah, let's face it, that's a reality of many situations. That's where a strong facilitator can really work their magic. Now, it's true that the best facilitators are basically seen but not heard, or their hand is deft. But if it seems like somebody's monopolizing the conversation, or if it seems like everyone is nervously looking at the officers or the C-level execs before speaking, then you realize you haven't set the right tone. And again, you've got to set some ground rules and you've got to loosen people up. A good facilitator can identify, well, we've heard a number of great ideas. Let's make an effort to hear from people who've yet to contribute. So you're putting the shy people on notice that you are going to be calling on them. And it's understood that we want to hear from them. And then you have to create the space for them. Because there are people that monopolize or like to hear themselves speak. And there are people who have lots of ideas, but a funny thing how they soak up and suck up all the energy in the room, and it doesn't leave a space for other people. It's funny, a past international president was sharing a story. Years ago, I tried to recruit him to leadership beyond the club level, and he just wasn't open to it. Fascinatingly, an international director was in his home club, and everyone deferred to her for everything because she had done it all and had so much to share. It was only when she left the area, retired and moved to a different district, that a void was created that he stepped in to fill. And lo and behold, he ended up becoming an international president. And I think the same thing happens in brainstorming. There are the frequent contributors. It's important to set a tone so that you hear from everybody and that everyone has an equal footing and feels that way coming in.
One of the things that you talk about in your article for giving some structure and direction to the brainstorming session is the challenge question. Can you talk about how the challenge question works and how you know that you've got a good challenge question?
Yeah, very good question on your part. Sometimes brainstorms fall short because the question may be too specific, or the question may be locking in a course of discovery or a direction for idea generation. However, the opposite can also occur where you have too vague a question. You know, without parameters, when anything is possible, sometimes everything is, and we fall short. What you really want to do is pose a question that's open-ended. It may start with, how many ways can we, or let's identify strategies for, or what are some ideas we can generate for, and then you state the challenge, the problem, the task at hand. But sometimes the question is so specific or so general that we flounder. And so it's okay to massage the question and even have a discussion about this. You know, people who are interested in this might really enjoy researching a little bit about design thinking and some of the work they do at Stanford's D School, the design school, and work that's been done at IDEO, I-D-E-O. IDEO is a company here in Silicon Valley that helps other companies bring products and services to the world, creative ones. And they talk a lot about the challenge question. One of the books that I cited in the article by a colleague and friend of mine on creative collaboration goes into detail about this concept. Bruce Honig is one of the co-authors of that. I'm looking for the other co-author's name because it's French and I don't want to mangle it. I know there's
Alan Rothstein.
That's the one. Thank you. You know, they go into some depth about the challenge question. And when you look at the sidebar for the article in the April edition, let's go to Plan B, brainstorming, you'll see that I've given you some phraseology. I've given you some wording of typical questions you might use to set your brainstorm up, whether it's generating ideas about membership or attendance or meeting rooms or meeting formats or high-performance leadership projects. They're questions that are specific and yet general enough to allow all sorts of creative thinking.
It makes sense. I'm looking at one right here. It's number 11. How can we leverage social media to better promote our club and attract new guests, I think, is a better question than just saying, oh, we need to use Facebook or should we use Twitter, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, because it could be Instagram or Pinterest or Snapchat or Twitter. And the moment we start to narrow the focus early on, we've already closed down certain avenues of exploration, certain doors to discovery.
What would a good discussion look like if we took this question as an example?
Well, once you've established the ground rules that we're going for quantity, not quality, so suspend judgment of your own and other people's ideas, you know, we'd probably throw out the obvious ones. You and I have touched on a couple already. That's the low-hanging fruit, and that's important. And yet, from that, when we really exhaust the obvious, that's when the interesting things start to happen. Maybe we set a goal. We want to generate 30 ideas by the time this call ends or by the time the session ends, and that's okay. Then once we exhaust the obvious, then we really start to look at things differently and turn them upside down and twist them and contort them and stretch them. It's not unlike generating humor, where you take something obvious and you exaggerate it and stretch it and juxtapose it and deliberately contort it to find the funny. I think with brainstorming, something similar is going on. You're putting ideas together in different ways. You're drawing from other metaphors and other fields. And it's okay to bring whatever you bring to the table, whatever work and experience you have and training you have and places you've lived and things you've observed and things you've experienced. Just as earlier in this call, you were describing things that happened in your club, good things, bad things. We all bring wonderful experiences that we can apply in a brainstorming session as we generate ideas for the greater good.
I like that, because you were saying keep the questions sort of open-ended, but the goal specific. So we're going to generate 30 ideas. You're fairly close to the end of your session. You go, we got 26. Let's see if we can push for 4 more. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, you wouldn't say we need 300 ideas. That would be demoralizing.
Right. We'll be here all day.
We need 3 ideas. I think the worst thing to do is say, we need 3 good ideas.
Okay.
And then as they come in, go, nope, nope, nope. That's being a naysayer.
But just a thought here. One of the things that I always love about brainstorming sessions is when you have a situation where an idea that's initially suggested that seems like a crazy idea actually bears some fruit or from sort of some new perspective or insight. For example, I was just thinking as you guys were talking about this example of using social media in your club, I could see someone throwing out there, I got an idea, let's put our club on Match.com or on Plenty of Fish or something like that. But, you know, even that idea could help the club say, well, wait a second, maybe there's something to that. Let's put our club out there, represent our club on social media as if we were trying to attract a mate. So, you know, let's use pictures that are going to put our best foot forward. Let's use language that's going to make us seem more attractive to other people. So at first, it sounds like a crazy idea, but you could actually take something from that.
It reminds me of an article I wrote about 5 years ago, or maybe more by now, about double happiness, about the singles clubs out there and the marriages that came from it.
Ryan, I remember that article, actually. I do, yeah.
Ryan, what you said was brilliant. I really had to hold my tongue to stop from saying yes, yes.
But, yes, yes. And.
Along the way. Absolutely, zany ideas have a purpose. If somebody were listening to the transcript, you said, as you described that idea, you gave a yes, but. And all I would say is, just change the but to an and, because those zany ideas, the ones that seem off kilter, can nevertheless lead us in a direction from which we can apply something from the dating. If you think about it, isn't membership and getting guests to a meeting, isn't it a blind date? Isn't it really dating? So the metaphor is very valid. And that's what happens. Every idea has some value, even if it gets you to close a door or think differently or go down a different path. So my feeling is that it is all good, yet a good facilitator can make sure that we're not using bad language or making inappropriate remarks or alienating or polarizing anybody in the room. We have to create an environment where everyone feels safe and comfortable to let loose and to let fly with zany, fun, creative, over-the-top, outlandish ideas from which very logical, probable things can occur. Every great idea at some point was probably a radical idea when espoused by somebody. You know, that's how innovation occurs, by thinking beyond the basics and the obvious and what is to what could be.
What you're saying makes a lot of sense, because I'm thinking back to many years ago when I worked for a financial institution, and I recall being in a meeting where there were some challenges, there were some discussions happening, and then somebody said something that was absolutely just ridiculous, and I think it was more out of frustration or stress, and then that actually sparked the conversation.
And a good facilitator will know how to navigate that and to take what's good out of it, to not shut that person down or embarrass them or cast a pall over future zany ideas, but just to slightly tweak it and say, I like this aspect of it, continuing in that vein, you know, just a minor tweak, but always affirming. The yes is so important, then the and follows thereafter.
At some point in the process, all these great ideas have been generated. There does need to be some judgment brought to the table, doesn't there? And what does that look like? I know groups can do this different ways, but what are some of your thoughts, Craig, on how to finally go back and evaluate all these ideas and then make some decisions on what to do with them?
Great question as well. In the research for this article, I spoke with Sue Walden, who is a luminary and one of the key people behind the Applied Improv Network that's so popular now at putting improv into the work world. And in the article, I believe you'll see that she says that, look, brainstorming and ideation is one part of the process. Once you gather these ideas, there is a selection process that must occur. We need to cull down from this list of 133 or 134 ideas, what's feasible, what's salvageable, what's got potential. Maybe you color code them. Maybe you do this with a subcommittee, or you do this after the actual brainstorm. There definitely needs to be a sifting through process, but it shouldn't be done by any one person. Again, a lot of things will be happening. There'll be the official brainstorm session, and then people will go home and sleep on it, but still be thinking about it. And once you put ideas into the universe, wonderful things are set in motion, and ultimately, great initiatives can come out of this. Yeah, you'll be able to identify the ideas that help generate the better ideas, and so you may draw a line through them, or you color code them, and they may not make the final list of actionable ideas, but they all serve a purpose nonetheless.
Craig, while we're doing a lot of brainstorming here, if, let's say, a club, for example, would like to get started in brainstorming, or it's something that they think, this might really be a good idea, how would you recommend they get about doing this or introducing it to the club?
Great question. If they needed to stay in their usual meeting place and time, I would say designate a chunk of time in a particular meeting, or perhaps the entire meeting, to the process. I would let people know in advance. I would set the room up differently to create it in a festive environment full of fun things. To maybe you have some music to set a tone, and you maybe wear zany outfits. In the article, I talked about Hawaiian shirts and a Hawaiian motif. We had a boring rectangular room that we called Aruba, and then we gave it an island feel. But definitely leave time for a warm up, and some of the best ideas come toward the very end when you've exhausted the obvious. But set the tone, have some fun with it, celebrate, have food if you can, and libations. Of course, don't break any laws. I think it's a great activity for the club. I've certainly led sessions at conferences where we taught people how to go back to their club and lead a brainstorming session. And there are lots of flavors, but the environment really does inform the experience, and a good facilitator will set the tone and warm people up.
Now, there's more ways of brainstorming rather than just, okay, everyone's just going to throw out a bunch of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
In your article, you actually offer 9 different brainstorming techniques. Can you maybe just share briefly one or two?
Sure. Sometimes different flavors of brainstorming are good. Sometimes we get too much in our head. We're too linear and too logical. It makes sense to do drawings or to express ideas through our body. You can actually conduct activities, let people know that nobody will judge them on their drawing prowess, but you can generate ideas visually with images rather than just with words. And when you do this collaboratively, amazing things come out of the session that might not have come if you were just confined to using words to express ideas. So that's one approach. Even being a contrarian, doing the opposite and taking the opposite of what would normally be done in most situations can be an interesting exercise in generating new possibilities.
I'm thinking of Monty Python, the argument sketch. If I must argue with you, I must take up a contrary position. And that's not just saying, no, it isn't. Yes, it is.
One of my favorite improv activities I do around the holidays when there's a lot of stress it's actually a variation of yes and, but the truth is we start with a complaint. What's a complaint that you have right now? And it might be long lines or road rage or that music they play incessantly. And then each person is invited to say, instead of yes and, they say, and if that weren't bad enough, and they have, so pretty soon everyone's complaining, they're kvetching, you know, they're bemoaning. But the truth is, it's so exaggerated, it's fun, and by the end of it, everyone feels great because we've gotten it out of our systems and spared our family and friends from this negativity.
Well, Craig, we certainly appreciate you joining us on the show today. Lots of ideas. I feel like my creative juices are running full throttle here. How can folks get in touch with you or learn more about you?
Thanks for asking. I've got two websites, one for Toastmasters, speakandleadwithconfidence.com, and there's plenty of articles and resources there that are available for free. And you can learn more about what I do for the Toastmasters world, where I've published a series of books in the Good, Better, Best series. Also, my primary work website, expressionsofexcellence.com, or craig@ for email. And I would love to hear from you and hear your ideas, and please share your successes with me. That's where I am on the web. And if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, let's ideate, let's brainstorm. Give me a jingle.
Awesome.
Great. Well, thank you so much once again. Really appreciate it, Craig.
Great job, gentlemen. I've enjoyed putting my mind together with yours, and great things have come out of it, as you do every week in your podcast. Congratulations.
Thanks. Thanks for being on the show. Ryan, I think we're going to be looking at brainstorming a whole lot differently from now on.
Yes, sir.
When it comes to web hosting, don't mess around with a good enough web solution. Go to hostingsmallbiz.com for a web hosting platform that's both simple and powerful in terms of what it can do for your business. Whether it be sell more products, increase your visibility, or allow more interaction with your prospects. Get your web hosting account today at hostingsmallbiz.com. That's hostingsmallbiz.com.